As Ted said, we moved here about 20 years ago, and eventually I got into, I've always been avid wildlife and fishing, not so much hunting, but fishing, canoeing, and that sort of stuff, and around 2016 or so, we got ourselves a decent camera and went out and started taking pictures. So now this is where you usually find me, out in a swamp somewhere, carrying that big-ass stupid camera around. I have severe COPD, so it gets to be a challenge sometimes, and trying to move through the swamp and not scare all the animals away is a challenge, and just trying to get through the swamp and not drop that thing, because it's probably worth more than my car is at this stage. But so far I've managed. I haven't, I've fallen in the swamp, but the camera hasn't. And it's a very good camera. It's Nikon's top-of-the-line camera. And the long lens allows me to stay well back from the wildlife so that I don't have to disturb them and let them behave naturally, and that way I can get natural pictures of them. This little spot just north of Omimi that we go. Actually, we drove by the other day. I haven't seen deer there for a while, but just a few days ago we drove by and we saw half a dozen deer out in the field. We've seen as many as 28 deer in that field. It's a place where they yard up over the winter and feed there. Yeah. So it's really something to see that many of them together in one spot. This is my favorite thing to photograph. This is a, whoops. What's that? Oh, come on. This is a bald eagle. I didn't know until I started, until I took up photography, that we had bald eagles here in the Kawarthas. We were driving along the Otonabe one day, and I saw people out taking pictures of something out on the ice, and inspected a little closer and found out it was a bald eagle they were taking pictures of, and I've been hooked ever since. They're my favorite thing to photograph. This picture is about as close as I ever got to one. She was probably not more than 30 or 40 feet up in a tree above me, and they're really hard to get close to. They see everything, and they're very shy of people. They don't, they've been shot and harassed, and they don't let people get close to them generally. You're not going to sneak up on them. But, for some reason this day, she let me, doesn't seem to be communicating very well. For some reason, this day she let me get a little. Oh, that's not the way this is supposed to work. Okay, so we went to zoom in. So, yeah, this day she let me get closer, much closer than usual. She was busy hunting and didn't pay as much attention to me as she usually does. And I got a nice close-up of her. And this is her. This is one of the biggest bald eagles that I've ever seen. In this picture, she's just on her way to steal a fish from a seagull. They'll, if they can find something that's already dead or steal it for somebody, they will. They're quite capable of hunting, but if they can find an easy meal, they're not above taking it. This is a bald eagle as well. Bald eagles don't get their white heads until they're about 5 years old. It comes in gradually over those 5 years. So you can see it's got a little bit of white on its tail. It's starting. And you can see just a little white on its head as well. This one's probably about 3 years old. And it's heading for a fish carcass to have a meal. For some jump in the winter. I don't know why. This mic keeps moving here, too. They're a bottom-feeding fish. They have no business jumping, but they do. And it gives the once they jump, they land up on the ice, and they stay on the ice. So this thing's cutting in and out, right? Okay, there. And once they get up on the ice, they stick there and they're stranded. So they make a good easy meal for the eagles to come in and scavenge them. And you can imagine how strong their beaks and claws are, because once that fish is there for a little while in the winter, it freezes solid, just like a piece of meat in your freezer. So can you imagine trying to bite into that? And they tear it apart, no problem. The crows and seagulls come and they can't touch it until an eagle starts tearing some pieces off and they can pick up some of the smaller pieces. And this is again that juvenile. You can see here a little more how he's getting his white head a little bit. He'd be about 3 years old there. And this is two young ones fighting over the carcass. A lot of these eagles are from the same family, so their fights are more just mock fights. They never really hurt each other. It's all posturing, and it looks ferocious and vicious, but they rarely ever touch each other. They have a real feeding hierarchy. The female's bigger than the male, so she gets to feed first, then the male, and the younger ones. And here, the female's letting them know that she gets to feed first. He had been sitting up in a tree, watching, waiting his turn. He got a little anxious and decided he'd come down and try and sneak a piece in. So she let him know right away that he's to wait his turn. And this is something different. This is when it's not two members of the same family. These are members of two different families of eagles. And then it gets a lot more serious. They can really hurt each other. They use their wings like arms, like a boxer. They'll punch each other with their wings, not to mention their claws and beaks are capable of doing serious damage. And this is one of my favorite ones to photograph. She's a very large female, and this is her favorite perch, was her favorite perch. We lost it in that Derrico windstorm. It blew down. And now she's still perched in the same area, but a little farther away. So I have to put a converter on my line for more reach.
Amy, you mentioned that you welcome questions.
Oh, yes. Sorry, I forgot to. Yes. If anybody has any questions while I'm talking here, feel free to speak up and ask as we go along. They're all over. They're different places all the time. I can't give out the exact location of them. And it changes all the time, and it wouldn't do any good to give it out other than a few places like this where they perch regularly. But around the water, anywhere around the water, they eat mainly fish. So they're usually around the lakes, and their nests are usually somewhere very close to the water. But they move. You can see them anywhere. I've seen them right on the edge of Lindsay here, over in where they're building that new subdivision. I've seen them over there, different. Anywhere where there's an animal carcass, they'll come to stuff. There's more and more of them. They're getting much more common to see them here in the Kawartha Lakes.
Are they like ospreys?
They're like ospreys, but a giant osprey. They're about twice the size of an osprey. She stands about this tall if she's standing on the floor beside me. They're massive birds. They're at least twice the size of an osprey. But they behave very much like ospreys. They nest around the water. They eat mostly fish. And, you know, they actually compete with the ospreys for nests and fishing rights. The ospreys and the eagles aren't friends. And they're actually just beginning to nest right now. Usually by Valentine's Day, they're sitting on the eggs on the nest. They're one of the early birds to nest. And here she's cleaning the snow off her nest, getting it ready to lay her eggs. will be happening in the next few days. Yeah, she's coming to her perch again. Sorry?
How many eggs will she lay?
Either two or three. Usually two. But this particular bird, the last 2 years, she's had, she's raised three young ones, which is a bit odd for an eagle. Usually they just have two. There, look at the claws.
Could that be because she's in a good area for fish?
Yes. She knows she's done. And,
do a quick change here.
I don't know what. Check. Test. Test. There we go. We're good. Came off first thing. Okay, is that going to work any better? Let's see. Yes, yes, they'll use the same nest for many, many years, and it keeps getting bigger and bigger each year. Some of them are, they weigh a couple of tons. Eventually, quite often, they'll take the tree down because the nest just gets so big and heavy. And each year, the straw and stuff that they bring composts in the nest and rots and gets heavier and heavier. And, yeah, eventually it'll often bring the tree down. I've known three or four nests that have collapsed because of the weight. And this is eagles making babies. We just watched this a couple of days ago. They're mating here. They'll mate a dozen times over the course of about 2 weeks around this time of year just to make sure that they're successful in procreating. And this is the kiss afterwards. So on to another, yes?
How do they get along with ospreys?
They don't. They're both vying for the same fish. They eat the same things. They're in the same territory, and they don't like each other. Every time the osprey flies by the eagle nest, he'll take every opportunity to dive bunt down and harass the eagle, and the same with the eagles. If at one point over in just south of Barrie on Lake Simcoe, I watched one day as an eagle went to an osprey and took its young back and fed them to its young ones. So yeah, they're enemies. They don't like each other. Yes, they'll eat loons. They'll eat anything they can get on the lake, anything that they can carry. So.
What about their call, their voice? I mean, do they make a similar tone to the osprey?
It's similar, yes. It's similar. They talk a lot. They constantly communicate with their partner. They mate for life. They're with the same partner. Unless something happens to that partner, then they'll find another one. But they're very vocal, and they have a very loud scream, if anything, louder than the osprey, because they're bigger. And, they're...
I wonder if an eagle can speak osprey.
I don't know. That's a good question. Yes. I've been watching her for 7 or 8 years now, yes.
Is there distinctive markings that you're able to tell it's
not really, no. It's very hard even to tell her from her mate unless you see them side by side. There are sometimes, some years, she'll be missing a feather or something, and you can identify her by that. But just generally, no, you can't tell one eagle from another. Because of where she is, mostly. I do somewhat recognize her. But no, generally speaking, it's very hard to tell them apart. They go through several of them, and that's how the young ones' feathers gradually come in over time. Each time they molt their feathers, they come in with a little different coloring and more advanced in the white and in their head and tail, so that, yes, they're constantly changing. That's one of the ways of identifying how old they are. They go through several major ones. There's periods where they can't fly because they're molting all of their feathers. So this is another one of my favorite raptors. We're lucky right here in and around Lindsay for many years. They've been coming down here. They live and breed up in the Arctic, and they come down here in the winter. Mostly young ones that can't find a territory up north come down here and hunt in the fields around Lindsay. There's a lot of mice and voles in the farm fields. So they come down here to hunt. They have to eat 7 or 8 mice or voles a day to survive. So it keeps them very busy. They spend most of their day hunting. They're one of the few owls that hunt during the daytime, because up north there is no night. The sun comes up and they have 24 hours of daylight sometimes of the year. So they're used to hunting in the daylight. And a snowy owl. Not really, no. If anything, some of the ones from up north will come down here, but a lot of them stay. You actually see more of them here in the winter than you do in the summer. Yeah, they're very hardy birds, and the ones that are residents here stay here all year round. So this is him. This is a perch we used to hang out around. He'd sit on the top of the stump. They have incredible eyesight and hearing. He can hear a mouse a football field away, moving around under a foot of snow. And he'll sit up on this perch, and he waits for the mice to come to him. He doesn't go out and fly over the field looking for them. He sits in one spot and just listens and watches. And he'll hear a mouse moving around, even under the snow, fly over and plunge into the snow like this and grab it. And swallows it down in a second. He just swallows it whole, comes back to his perch, and waits for another one to come by.
How long did it take you to capture that?
My fingers, I couldn't feel my fingers anymore. But then this day it was about minus 20 degrees, and we're just standing, just go and fly, go catch a mouse, let us get out of here. But, yeah, sometimes I have to wear put hand warmers in my gloves, and you can't feel the buttons on the camera. But, yeah, they're very patient. It takes a long time to get pictures like this. Some days, other days, you get there and it just happens instantly. It's just a matter of luck and timing. This guy's standing back thinking, I wish I could do that. He eats the same thing, but he has a lot harder time catching the coyote. Is a lot harder time catching mice than the owl does. And here you can see this one, if you notice, has a lot more barring on her feathers than the one you saw a minute ago. The first one was probably a male. They tend to be more white. Eventually he'll lose all of that barring and turn pure white, and she'll go the other way. As she gets older, she gets more and more barring, and looks much more like this. And if you look at the feet on them, right down to the feet, they're all insulated. They can survive up in the Arctic, no problem at all. So the winters down here are, just like Florida to them. And you wonder why they can, this thing doesn't want to work today. You wonder how they can, it's just not working. You wonder how they can see a mouse, look at the eyes. They can see just with their normal eyes better than we can see with a pair of binoculars. And their ears are right behind their eyes, kind of. They have stereo hearing. Their ears are different sizes, and they're located at different parts of their head, so they can locate exactly where something is just by hearing. This is another beautiful raptor. It's a Cooper's hawk. This one you're more liable to see in your backyard than anywhere. They tend to hang around bird feeders and prey on the birds that come to your feeder. They don't eat mice, and they will eat mice, but their main diet is small birds. So they'll sit on the fence around your bird feeder. These are a sharp-shinned hawk. They look very much the same. There's just a little difference in the size. This is a Cooper's hawk. And they're very fast. They're built for speed. They can take a bird right out of the air. They can catch them and grab them right out of the air. And this is another large hawk. This is a different family. They're not as fast as the Cooper's hawk, but they hunt out over the farmer's fields. It's called a rough-legged hawk. There's two different varieties. This is a dark morph, and this is a light morph, rough-legged hawk. One of the most beautiful hawks you'll ever see. Look at the pattern in his feathers. And they just cruise out over the farm fields looking for mice. They're one of the few hawks you'll quite often see them hovering high up over the top of the field, watching for prey. When they see something, they'll dive down and grab it with their claws. And this guy is similar, but he doesn't fly high. If you see a hawk flying really low over the farm fields, it's probably this guy. He's a northern harrier. They call him the gray ghost. And you can see why. The male and the female look very different. This is a male, and this is what he does. He's flying very low over the fields, looking and listening for mice. He's got almost an owlish look to his face. This just does not want to work today. I must be too far from the laptop or something. And very seldom that you see him perched. He's usually just cruising, constantly cruising over the farm fields, low hunting. I managed to catch him on a fence post for a few minutes. And this is his partner, the female. As you can see, they look very different. He's gray and white, she's brown and different shades of brown. But you can see the owlish look to her face. And the same like owls, they have excellent hearing. If a mouse is moving in the grass, they don't even need to see it. They'll hear it and can locate it just by hearing and pounce on it. There's a small little owl. They're not real common, but I did manage to find one earlier this year just outside of Omimi. It's called a short-eared owl. And they hunt in packs. They form a group called a parliament, if you can believe that. That's what a group of owls is called. I've seen as many as 17 of them roosting in one tree. So they kind of hunt together. And this was actually funny. When Astrid and I are taking pictures, she'll most often sit in the back seat behind me so that we're both on the same side of the van, and we use the van as a blind. As soon as you step out of the van, everything is gone. So we've learned to just stay in the van and shoot out through the window. So she gets behind me so that we're both on the same side of the van, and if we see something, we can both shoot it. So this day we were shooting these short-eared owls, and I'm shooting away, and after a little while, there he flew. He's gone. She says, no, he's not. We didn't realize we were shooting two different owls. She was shooting this one over here, and I was shooting these two. But they blend in really well. You can see how well he blends in with that wood pile. Eh? And they're very acrobatic flyers. They twist and weave, and same thing. They're looking for mice out in the farm fields. This guy's pretty good at catching mice too, and chickens. Farmers don't like this guy. It's an American mink. I've got more pictures of his rear end going out of the picture than any other animal. Because they're really fast, and they don't like people. They've been hunted for years for their pelts. So they don't like people. But this day we caught him cold. He came up onto the ice shelf with his fish in his mouth. Started coming back towards the den, looked up, and there we were standing right in front of him. But he's a pretty quick-thinking little fella. He just ducked back down under the ice and went under us below the ice shelf and got back to his den. Oh, this was funny. This is an otter. He's a river otter. He's about 10 or 15 times the size of a mink. And we were watching him. This was up in Young's Cove. He was fishing in these. There was an ice shelf going out into the bay. And all kinds of little holes in the ice he was fishing. In those holes, he'd go down, dive down, catch a fish, and bring it up on the ice to eat it. So we were watching. He kept looking over to his right. So I look over to see what he's looking at. And here's a mink over on the other side of the bay. And the mink is coming towards the otter. What's going on here? Because the otter is about a tenth the size of the mink. He has no business messing with the otter. And he went right up to him face to face and tried to tell him that this is my fishing spot. What are you doing fishing here? Until the otter flinched. And there's the mink, all 4 feet off the ground, his tongue between his teeth, running for his life. I got half a dozen pictures of him with his tongue between his teeth. One time it works, and then the next time it doesn't. Oh, yeah, he knew he wasn't in any danger. That was his plan all along. He was going to confront him, and as soon as he looks at me, I'll run. And the otter actually went back into the water and tried to go under the ice shelf and come up, but there was no chance. He wasn't catching the mink. So he went back to fishing. And here he is with two fish in his mouth at the same time. How do you do that with no hands? How do you catch two fish? They're very good at what they do. Everybody knows this one. This is a common loon. I'm sure you've all heard them around Scugog Lake or on the river here doing their call. They're beautiful. One of the highlights of living up here is hearing them calling at night. And they're pretty good at fishing, too. And a classic picture of them with the young ones on their back. And this is the adult and the young one as it's gotten a little bit older. They spend just about all day feeding their fish. It goes through a routine. They feed them for an hour or so, as many fish as they'll eat. And then they take a rest, have a little nap, and then they go back to fishing. And here she catches the fish and brings it and hands it to the young one. And it starts off with, when they're really small, they catch tiny little minnows, like an inch long. You wonder how they can even catch them in their beak. And as the loons get older, they catch bigger and bigger fish to feed to them. And this is the kind of fish they catch when they're fishing for themselves. This was up around Bob Cage, and she was fishing under an ice shelf. It was in the spring of the year. There was just a little bit of ice left in the cove, and she was diving under this ice shelf and coming up with suckers. And I watched her eat 4 of these. So she wasn't flying anywhere after that. And this is her eating a sucker.
Swallow them whole.
And there it goes down the throat. These These white marks you see on the neck are stretch marks. There's another, this is another one of my favorite birds to photograph, is a great blue heron. They're quite common in this area, and they're just amazing to watch. They're really good at what they do. They catch fish. And this is on the pond in Omimi. I've fished on the pond. I live in Omimi, so I've spent a lot of time fishing on the pond. And here you're going to watch this guy catch a bass that I'd be envious of. He's they stand and they wait. They're very patient. I've sat and waited for 3 hours for him to catch a fish. Astrid gets impatient. She's getting better. She's learned to be patient. You have to be with the photography. And so he stands there and he just stays dead still, waiting for a fish to come by. When one comes by, pay attention to this skinny little neck that he's got here. It's about an inch in diameter. And so he sees a fish, reaches out and spears it. He's got his beak goes pretty much right through this fish. He starts bringing it up, and I couldn't believe what he brought up here. Look at the size of this bass that he's got. It's about a 4-pound bass. If any of you have ever caught a 4-pound bass, you know how they fight. And he manhandled that thing like it was nothing, with that skinny little neck, and brought it up. The fish is thrashing back and forth. You can see it swinging its tail here, trying to get away. Within about 30 seconds, he had the thing off of his beak and into his mouth, ready to go down his throat. And yes, he's going to swallow this whole too. There it goes. The fish he's got is a largemouth bass. The nickname for that, for a largemouth bass, is bucket mouth. They might want to rethink that. And this is a pretty good bucket mouth right there. And there it goes. Nothing but the tip of the tail. And look at the inch thick, skinny little neck now, with a 4-pound bass going down it. And that's going to be in his stomach thrashing around, eh? They're just, the things they do are just mind-boggling, these birds. They'll eat anything. They'll eat anything smaller than anything that they can get down their throat. They'll eat alligators. They'll eat snakes. They'll eat chipmunks, muskrats. Anything that'll go down their throat, they'll eat it. That took probably less than 2 minutes, and within 5 minutes, he was back fishing again. There's another good, great little fish catcher. He's called a belted kingfisher. Tiny little bird, most photographers' nemesis. They're really hard to get close to. They're really fast, and they're really skittish. So you just get the camera up, and he's gone. But every once in a while, you get lucky and manage to get close to one. Belted kingfisher, really fast little birds. He fishes differently. He sits up in a tree somewhere up high and dives into the water like a little Learjet. And plunges in, and this time he didn't get a fish. But there he is with a fish. His mother never told him not to play with his food. They want the fish dead when they swallow it, because they eat a lot of little fish that have spikes in their back, like sticklebacks and stuff like that, that have sharp spikes on their dorsal fin. So he doesn't want this fish to get down in his stomach and then open up its dorsal fin and stab him in the throat. So he'll take the fish and just bang it against the stump. He'll stand on the top of the stump and just bang the fish into the stump until he knows it's dead before he eats it. It's a pretty weird thing to watch. Nature is, it can be hard to watch sometimes. And here he is diving for a fish again. He didn't realize it. He didn't get a fish here, but this dive saved his life. We didn't see it right away either. We were watching the kingfisher. We didn't notice that here he dove. He didn't get a fish. He's shaking himself off, getting rid of all the extra water. And then we noticed this guy sitting right over beside him. This is a Cooper's hawk, the one that I said sits beside your bird feeder and picks off little birds. Well, it was eyeballing the kingfisher. If he hadn't dove when he did, he would have been a meal for this guy. And then it saw us here and decided there was probably better places to go and hunt. And here's the kingfisher when he was more successful. That's a baby muskie that he's got there. And he's going to swallow that whole. He's going to turn that around and get that down his throat whole somehow. This has never done this before like that. It usually works flawlessly. So there you can see he's done some damage to him, but he's going to get that turned and swallow it. And here, let's try this one more time because I want to show you his feet. You see his little tiny feet here? It's just not going to work. You'll never see this guy walking around on the ground because he can't walk. His feet are so small that he can't take a step. He's always perched somewhere. They can't walk. Same, a loon can't walk very well. A loon can a little bit for a few steps, but they're really awkward. Their feet are so far back on their body that they're off balance, so they can't walk. Same with this guy. His feet are really far back, and they're just so tiny that he can't walk. Real pretty birds. They look a lot like a blue jay, similar, but with a much longer beak. Everybody recognizes this one. It's a beautiful red fox, a very healthy one, yeah. And she's about to be a mama, if you look at the size of her belly here. This is in the spring, and she's ready to have a litter of kits. And there's the kits a few months later. And they're the cutest little things, just like a bunch of little puppies. Eat, sleep, and play. That's all they do. And this is just outside of their den. Their den is just in behind them here. And they were very lucky that they were close to the den this day. He's having a little nap after his play. And the brother comes and curls up with him. But they didn't realize this guy was sitting about 30 feet over, eyeballing them for a meal. And they got lucky. They were close to the den. And one of them caught wind of it. And they all got into the den before she could get one of them. And,
she'd be able to take them down.
A small fox, yes. That's a barred owl. So they're a medium-sized owl. They'd stand about this tall. And they'd have no... They wouldn't be able to take a full-grown fox, but a baby like that, they would. And it was really interesting, this family of foxes. We'd been watching them for a while. And they had eight pups, a litter of eight. And we came by one day, and there were bits and pieces of a fox, a baby fox, laying around the den. So we figured somebody got one of them. You could see the backbone and pieces of the tail. A few days later, we came back, and there was another little fox laying there. So, we figured, now we're only going to see six the next time we see them. Came back a few days later, and there's eight foxes running around again. What happened? It turned out the mother was going to another fox's den and raiding some other fox's den, bringing their kits back to feed to her young ones. It just taught us that you can't jump to conclusions until you see what's going on. You don't really know. My mouth's too dry. This is the caller. Who cooks for you?
Nobody cooks for me.
she can imitate birds like nobody's business. It's, she talks to them, and they talk back to her. I'm smarter than that. I learned, we've been together 30 years. Look what I got, Mom. I ate the rest of them. Canada goose feather. Eat, sleep, and play. Tossing around a stick. And this is what the good camera does, eh? No matter how fast they're running by full speed, it's not just the quality of the pictures. It's how fast that camera focuses. I can get that thing on a bird in flight or on a fox running by, and it'll focus fast enough to get a good sharp picture. And here's Mama Fox coming back from a day hunting. And it's kind of like the loons. I didn't really explain it fully when the loons are catching fish for the young ones. When it first starts, they'll bring the fish and they'll pass it right to them. And if the young one drops it, they'll catch it again and pass it to them again. And they'll keep doing that until the loon gets the fish. And then as they grow older, she'll bring the fish and she won't pass it to them. She'll just let it go in front of them. And they have to catch the fish now. And if they don't, she'll catch it again and drop it in front of them. But it teaches them to start catching the fish. And it's the same with the foxes. She goes out hunting all day. She stashes everything as she catches it and brings it home. She's got probably 5 or 6 different little animals that she's caught during the day here. So she brings them back, and she doesn't take them when they're really young. She just brings them and drops them in front of them, and whoever gets them, and they eat. At this stage, the foxes are getting a little older, so she brings all the little animals back, but she takes them and she hides them at different spots around the den in the woods, and now they have to scent them out and go find them, and that's how they teach them how to start hunting. So here, she brings the food back, stashes them all, and then she comes and greets the young ones. And you can see she's got nothing. She's been gone all day. They're real happy to see her. And here she is, a good portrait of her and her young family, her little street gang, and the other little street gang, the opposing street gang, and their mother. Sorry?
What's the lifespan?
Not very long. Generally not more than about 5 years. And a lot of them don't live more than a couple of years just because of they live in around humans so much. They get hit by cars. They starve. It's a very competitive world for them out there. So they don't have a very, very long lifespan. So the foxes won that little battle. I think they got all of the little raccoons. This was about 5 kilometers outside of Omimi. You don't realize how many bears there are around here. I wrote a column about them, and then I got a call from Randy Burke. He's part of the Burke family that used to run Burke's Honey. And he's quite familiar with dealing with bears from their farming honey. And he clued me in a little bit on how many bears we have. You don't see them. They hide very well. But this was a huge male. And he was just outside of Omimi. It was a spot where I said for years, one day at the Astrid, we'd stop there just about every day. And I kept saying, one day we're going to see a bear here. And finally, one day I went, and it was, I think it was on my birthday, and she wasn't with me. And I got out. I had seen 3 nice bucks down in the back corner of the field, and I was actually getting out to look for them. I got out, and I put the binoculars up, and just as I was bringing up the binoculars, this is a wheat field that the bear's in. Just as I brought the binoculars up, he stood up, and he was about from here to the table from me. And, yeah, my heart, whoa. my heart skipped a few beats, and after a few seconds, I went, holy crap, I should get my camera. Get the camera out and managed to get a couple of pictures of him. Look at the size of the head on him, eh? And he was probably pushing 500 pounds. Big male. Uh-huh. Yeah, I read about that, yeah. Uh-huh. It was just over, not far from here, actually. It wasn't William, I forget which street, but it was right downtown. Yeah. But there's a lot more of them than you realize. This one is up in Algonquin Park. You can see the blueberries. It's at Mew Lake. There's huge blueberry fields there. More blueberries than I've ever seen in my life. They were like grapes growing on the vines. There's an old airport that the blueberries have taken over, and the bears come to eat the blueberries. So this day, it's something I'll never do again. We were probably, more than 2 miles from the car at this point, and this bear came out of the woods, and we just stayed where we were and photographed him. And afterwards, we realized that was a really stupid thing to do. Because if he had decided that he wanted one of us instead of blueberries, they can run about 40 kilometers an hour. So you're not going to run away from them. And here he is. This is when it gets scary, when you start sniffing the air. Would they taste better than blueberries? But he went back to eating his blueberries, and we were okay. But it made us realize afterwards, we thought that, we can't do that again. And there was another time we got caught up on Crown Land. We were filming herons at a heron rookery, and a bear came out of the woods. And he was on the other side of the pond. It was just a small pond, not much bigger than this church. And he was over on the other side, rooting around, and digging for grubs and stuff, turning over logs. And we're taking pictures, and then we realized, wait a minute, we'd gone in for the day, so we'd packed a lunch. We got salami sandwiches in our knapsacks. When it got really scary was when he left. He was fine when he was over there, and there's a little body of water between us and him. But then he went back into the woods. And then you start wondering, where is he going to come out? Did he smell our salami sandwiches? From that point on, we left this lunch in the car when we went into the woods. This was a really cool occurrence. This was in about August. And this is a soybean field, and two beautiful big 10-point bucks came out. They were eating soybeans. Deer love soybeans. And you can see one of them, this one still has the velvet on its antlers, and this one has rubbed most of the velvet off. I don't know why the two of them were hanging out together. I went back to that soybean field 100 times after that, never saw them again. Once they've been seen, they don't come back, especially the big bucks. There's the rest of the family. And this was that same soybean field, but this is a little smaller one. He's got about 6 or 8 points. This is a few days later, and then never saw another buck there, another deer there at all. And this is up in Algonquin Park. All of the other pictures except the bear and this one are right here in the Coarsa Lakes. We did make a couple of trips up to Algonquin. I wanted to get a picture of a bull moose with its horns. It took a while. First we got the mother and her calf. This was just along Highway 60. They were munching on leaves. And then eventually we got our nice picture of a buck. Bull. He looked at us for a second and went back to eating. He couldn't care less about us. Beautiful, huge animal. More dangerous than a bear, though. More people are killed by moose than by bears in Canada. Between both traffic accidents a lot, but They're real ornery critters, and if you get too close, they'll charge you and stomp you. Yeah, they're nasty. You don't want to get too close. You don't want to get close to a moose. Mm-hmm. They're pretty ornery critters. Can you tell which one's a female? It's a male eastern bluebird and the female eastern bluebird. He's going and catching little bugs to bring back to the nest, and she's letting him know that he needs to bring them faster and bigger. This is a real cool occurrence. This was one of the readers in the paper called me. He said, he's got this really weird bird hanging around his house. It looks like a robin, but it's white. So I went out, he asked me if I wanted to come out and take some pictures of it. So I went out to look, and it was a robin, but a white robin. It's what's called leucistic. It's similar to being an albino. It's a defect in the pigment in their skin, in their cells. But instead of being all white, it only affects part of their body. It doesn't have the blue eye. If it were albino, it'd have pink or blue eyes, and it would be all white. Leucism only affects some of the body. So it's still got the red breast like an ordinary robin, but the rest of him is all white. And he behaves just like any other robin. He doesn't know that he's any different. And stands out a little more. He's at a little more risk for being preyed on because he's a little easier to see. But, and here's that good camera. These are really fast. I've driven down the Otonabee River at 60 kilometers an hour and had one of these guys flying right beside me, keeping up all the way. It's a hooded merganser, a relatively small duck. And the camera is able to get on him and get a picture. And some practice. So here he is walking on water. You can look a whole bunch of different ways. You can make that crest on his head stand right up, or you can lay it down. You can have a whole bunch of different looks. Wood duck, probably the most beautiful duck we have here in Ontario. Looks like somebody painted him and went overboard on the colors. Just beautiful, and he's got this nice little crest on his head. When he's in mating season, there isn't a more beautiful duck anywhere.
What's that one called?
Wood duck.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, and this is the male and the female. In most birds, the male is the prettier of the two. They're more colorful. They have to attract the female, so they're the more colorful. And yeah, I know, eh? Somebody screwed up there. common goldeneye. You'll see these out in Lake Scugog or all around, especially this time of year. There's lots of them. And you can see where he got his name, Goldeneye. And we spent a whole bunch of time down at the marina in Omimi. I shot about 1,000 pictures to get this picture. They dive, they're vegetarians. They don't eat fish or anything. They just eat vegetation from the bottom of the river. So they dive down and munch on vegetation and then pop back up to get some air. So we were trying to catch them just as they broke the surface coming back up. It was a lot harder than we thought it was going to be. Eventually did manage to get one. And this guy's called a long-tailed duck. I wonder why. See the big long tail sticking out the back of him there. I wish this thing would work. See the big long tail. And that's the way it's supposed to work every time. Oh, this is a real cute little guy. He's just a plain kind of thing. When I first saw him, didn't really care a lot for him. He's kind of boring, but as I saw him more and more, the more I saw him, the more I got to like him. It's called a pike-billed grebe. He's not really a duck. He looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, but he doesn't have webbed feet. So he's technically not a duck. Apparently you have to have webbed feet to be classified as a duck. And he's a real cheeky little thing. He's only tiny. He's a little small little thing. And he doesn't like to fly. He's like a little submarine. He can inflate the air in his feathers and can just submerge himself like a submarine. He'll just be sitting in one spot and let all his air go out, and he'll start sinking till just his head sticks up like a periscope on a submarine, and he'll get to where just his eyes are above the water, and he's still watching you. Everywhere you go, he's watching you. When he wants to get away, he'll just submerge. They don't like to fly, so he'll submerge himself, and he'll go over here and come up in the reed somewhere, and you'll never find him once he decides he doesn't want to be found. And they eat fish. He's real good at catching fish. And what was unique about him, he's not supposed to be here. He's supposed to go south for the winter. But for 3 winters, he stayed in Omimi there by the dam because he had open water and he was still catching fish. And then eventually we realized after about 3 years, because he doesn't like to fly, you didn't see it. But one day we saw him going back, doing runs back and forth on the water, trying to fly. One of his wings was messed up. He must have got shot or something during hunting season, or another bird got him or something had broken one of his wings. And it was finally starting to come back where he was trying to fly again. And that's why he didn't go south for the winter. But he survived. He hung out with 4 geese there and tried to pretend that he was one of them. And he's going to swallow this fish whole. Like, if you can imagine that, the fish is bigger than his head, but he gets it down whole. just a real cheeky little thing. Just tons of character. I really got to like him. And from the small little thing to the biggest bird we have in Ontario, that's a trumpeter swan. They were completely wiped out here back in the 1920s. Women wanted the feathers for their hats and stuff. And they shot them almost to extinction just for their feathers. And one guy was quite instrumental. Harry Lumsden was quite instrumental in helping to bring them back. And now you're starting to see them on every body of water here. We were out the other day and had 22 of them swimming around in front of us. There's a pair of nests in Omimi. There's a pair nesting in Scugog. They're nesting on just about all of the lakes here now. So they're making a really good comeback. It's got like a 9-foot wingspan. They're huge. Beautiful birds.
Yeah, there's two of them.
They're all over here now. They like it here in the Kawarthas because we've got a lot of shallow water, and that's how they feed. They use that long neck to reach down to the bottom and gather food. And we've got spots where we're around all the locks where the water stays open all winter so they can feed. And they're very hardy birds. You'd think they'd all go south, but a lot of them stay here all winter. These guys are fun to shoot, too, in the breeding season, the Canada geese. Some of them do, but I've seen some pretty good battles with them. Sometimes they get along fine, but I had one in particular down in Port Hope. He was fine with all the other Canada geese, but there was one Canada goose there that he didn't like. And as soon as that one came within 100 yards of his nest, he was chasing it off and fighting with him. And there's a great blue heron with his scary Halloween face. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Here we go. They've got this really weird tongue. It's got a really weird shape. And this kind of a barb, it has something to do with helping them turn the fish. When they always swallow the fish head first, that way those barbs on the back of on the dorsal fin lay down and don't stab it on it when it's going down its throat. So that, and somehow this tongue aids them in turning the fish and pulling it down their throat. And here he's just shaking his head. He's shaking off the extra water. And it's beautiful as the sun was setting, shaking off the extra water. Here you're going to see what a great blue heron can do. He's been standing up on this log waiting for a fish to come by for about an hour. Finally, one comes by. So he's going to plunge in. He's going to go all in here. And again, this is what the camera does. My camera will take 12 pictures a second. So you can get action like this. Sorry? I generally use 1/1600th of a second as my shutter speed and try to aim for 8 as an aperture. No, it captures action real good. But with a long lens like that, you have to use a much faster shutter speed just because the shake of the camera will blur your pictures if you use anything slower. So here he is, he sees it, and you can see that he goes all the way in here. That fish had to be 3 feet under the water, just judging by where his tail and where his head would be. How does he even see that fish under the water? And dive in, and here he comes with it. And that fish is speared. Oh, come on. That's what I'm trying to show you here. And it's just not going to work. Yeah, you can see the beak right here coming right through the fish. He's speared right through. So now he's got a problem. Is both the top and the bottom of his beak are right through that fish. So how's he going to get it down his throat? Well, he's got a neat little trick for that. You'll see it in a minute. There you can see both ends of his beak. This one going right through and this one going right through the fish. So here's how he does it. And this is that camera again. He starts here and slides the fish, uses his tongue to push the fish down towards the end of his beak. Then he throws his head forward real fast. The fish slides down off the end of his beak. He grabs it in midair, and now he's got it. Right? Never seen him drop one. Right? And that's what the camera does. Like I said, this camera takes 12 pictures a second. And I timed it, looked at it, and it did take 12 pictures in that second. So with 4 pictures, that whole process took 2/10 of a second. Yeah, I've done it before too. I've practiced a whole lot to get these pictures. Nikon. Nikon D5. No, that's got a mirror, yes. I just upgraded just recently to a mirrorless, and I'm just trying it out. Still not 100% sure I like it. The D5 is just an awesome camera. I love it. The mirrorless takes some getting used to. It's a totally different, there's a whole bunch of things that are done. We'll go into details about it, like the viewfinder, and a whole bunch of things are different about it, especially when you're using long lenses like I do. So here's the heron in all his glory. He's got like 18-inch feathers.
What's the lens?
600 millimeter. It's probably about this long, and 600 millimeter with f4. It's a very fast lens. And like I say, it costs more than my car. I got it secondhand. I would never be able to afford it new. It's new. They sell for over $20,000. But thanks for TGG. I got a good deal on a used one, and I got into the game. These feathers, like I say, these are almost 18 inches long. Just beautiful birds. I love photographing them. Sometimes they look completely awkward, and other times they're the most graceful things you ever saw.
When you said that $20,000, is that for the camera or for the lens?
For the lens. Camera's another 10. If you go out and buy that new, you're walking through that swamp with about $30,000 sitting on your shoulder. You don't want to fall. But like I said, both the camera and the lens, I got them secondhand. I don't have $30,000 to drop on a camera. Sorry? No. Everything is digital. Since about 2000, film just pretty much went out of existence. There's still a niche market, but you really have to look around to find developers, and you pretty much have to develop your own now. And it's an art thing now, but everything is digital now, and the cameras just don't compare. Back in the film days, you couldn't take pictures like I'm taking now. The cameras have just improved so much. Flying fish. Even the seagull getting in on the action here, right? He didn't catch that. He just found it floating somewhere. And this is a heron on its nest. Herons nest in rookeries. It's a colony. Anywhere from 5 or 6 nests to 200 nests in a colony. They do it for safety. They look after each other's nests. And the little ones are the weirdest looking little things you see. No, it's just not going to work today. Try and get over here closer. No, even the mouse isn't working. No, it's just not going to work. But yeah, they're real, real weird looking little things. And mean little things. They pick on each other. They find one that's weak and they just terrorize them. And loud and noisy. There you go. When she comes back with food, you should hear the commotion and the fight that goes on to be the one that gets the food.
How long do they stay in
there? About 6 weeks. Yeah, and they grow really fast. They eat a lot of fish. She's constantly, both the mother and father, both constantly bringing them fish. They grow really fast. Here you can see they're growing. This is another little heron that a lot of people don't even realize we have here. This is called a green heron. He does the same thing and looks a little bit like the blue heron, but he's tiny little thing. He's only about a foot tall. Does the same thing, catching fish. And he can look a dozen different ways. He can have a long neck. He can compress his neck down till it's nothing. Or you can watch what he does here. He's standing on the shore. He sees a fish out in the water. Boom. Reaches out. Full extension. And somehow he's going to pull himself back to the shore with the fish in his mouth. No kidding, eh? Yeah, same thing. They'll eat anything, the bugs, frogs, mice, anything they can get down their throat, anything moving along the edge of the shore, they'll eat it. These are the sandhill cranes. And again, we're really lucky here in Lindsay. Just a little bit west of here, they gather in the fall, in huge flocks, up to 1,000 birds in a flock, getting ready, staging to fly south. So it gives you a real good chance to see them. And they gather in the cornfields, where the corn has already been harvested, and they pick up little bits and pieces of corn that are left over, and all kinds of little squabbles over the corn rights. And they're there with their young. When they have their young, they separate and go off onto, just on their own to little ponds and stuff. And just the family raises their young by themselves. And then in the fall, they get together and get ready to go south. The young are just the cutest little things you ever saw.
But they're more of a ground bird than a water bird, then, or is that?
Well, they'll use both. They live around the water, and they that's what they got the long legs for, wading in the water, and they will eat fish. Just in this particular habitat around here, they seem to, and where you see them a lot of the time, they're on land. When they're in the water, they often hide in amongst the bulrushes, and you don't tend to see them as much. But when they gather in huge flocks, they're in the cornfields, and that's when you see them more. This is another one that comes down here in the winter, sometimes not as often as the snowy owl. This is a great gray owl. He's the biggest owl that we have in Ontario. And just another beautiful bird. I get to spend a couple of months with this guy. He'd been hit by a car, and I picked him up off the road. Thought he was dead. I thought I was picking up a dead owl. As I bent over to pick him up, he got up and came to life and flew to the edge of the road. But his wing was damaged, so I put him in a cedar tree, and he survived. And he found a nice little apple orchard to hunt in, so I spent a couple of months with him in this apple orchard while watching him hunt. And a lot of them, they come from the boreal forest up north, and a lot of them have never seen a human, so they're not afraid of us. He'd fly, he'd come and he'd land as close to me as that screen is to me. Or he'd fly over my head and just, you know, graze the top of my head as he went over. And just not afraid at all. Until he saw a hawk. This here, he's got himself all puffed out. There was a hawk flying overhead. And he was just petrified. He didn't lie. He made himself look as big as he could. Never took his eyes off of that hawk the whole time it was there. Just an awesome bird. Okay. We'll end with this one. This was down at my mother's house in Belleville. At the time, she was about 85 or so. And I'd go down and do some chores for her, help her out around the house. And I'd always take the camera. She lived in Belleville, which is close to Prince Edward County. So when I got some free time, I'd go over to Prince Edward County and look for birds. So I'd done that, went over to Long Point. It's about a two-hour drive from her house. Didn't see a bird all the way to Long Point. Wandered around in the woods for 3 hours. Didn't see a bird. Came back, didn't see a bird. Never took a picture the whole time I was over there. Got back to Mother's yard. She's got just a little lot right in town. One tree in the yard. And as I'm getting out of the car with the camera to put the camera back in the house, I hear a hawk scream. And what? Can't be. Look up, and here's a merlin. It's a small falcon. Sitting in the one tree in Mother's backyard. And he's got another little bird that he's captured and is eating. That's what they do. They're real good at catching little birds, even better than the Cooper's hawk at catching little birds. He's a little bit smaller. He's like a miniature version of a peregrine falcon. And he's tearing this little bird apart and eating it in Mother's one tree. So, okay, filmed all that. The next morning I get up, first thing I did, check to see if he's there. It's pouring rain, and he's there, and he's brought his mate with him, and they're mating in Mother's tree in the backyard. And there's the look I got afterwards. Some bird porn. And there's the young ones. That's a young merlin. It's not the same family. I never did see the young ones from that, but this was just across the street from our place. That's a young merlin. They had nested there, and I managed to get some pictures of the young ones just before they left the nest. Real cute little things until you see them with another bird's foot hanging out of his mouth. So yeah, we'll call that a show. Just one more. Whoops. Oh yeah. Just one more here that I want to show you. See, I could keep going for a while here. seen as Trump's back in the game again. This is an eagle I photographed. Trump said he was going to make things good again. The eagle was fine. 2 minutes after this, he looked like a normal eagle.
There. I've seen something. I believe they're white egrets.
Yes.
I didn't think they were normally would be this far north.
Actually, farther north. They go. They stop here as they're passing through. They breed mostly north of here and south of here, but more and more they're starting to breed here. They in the fall of the year, they travel around a lot, so they come up here. And as the climate's getting warmer, more and more of them are starting to breed in this area. Over at the bottom end of Scugog, there's a few have nested there. Down in Prince Edward County, there's a huge rug there, the same as the great blue herons. They nest in colonies. There's a fair-sized colony of them there. Actually, there's two or three different colonies in Prince Edward County. So yeah, more and more you're starting to see them here. They're just, oh, they're a beautiful bird to watch, yeah. And I didn't include any. I've got pictures of them. We always get some in Omimi. Usually in the fall of the year, there'll be half a dozen of them that'll hang around there. And the same over in the south end of Scugog, there's about a dozen of them that hang around there.
Any chance of ever shooting a kestrel?
Yes. Astrid and I talked about it yesterday that I don't have a kestrel in here. Let me see if I have one, if I can find one quickly here. Just 1 second, I'm just seeing if I've got one. Here it is. No, that's a harrier. Yeah, I can't find them right now, but yes, I do have kestrels, and they're all around here. Kestrel's a small falconess. It's the smallest of the falcons. Beautiful bird, blue and brown, beautiful colors, and deadly little thing. Good question. Not much. Food availability of food and nesting sites. If you go out west, there's thousands of them. They're on every street corner. They're almost getting to be a pest out there on tops of hydro poles and. There's way more of them out there than there are here because they have no natural enemies and they've learned to scavenge. You go to the dumps in BC and there's hundreds and hundreds of them hanging around the dumps and they're nesting like right in amongst people. Out there, they're not afraid of people like they are here. They're not skittish at all. They've gotten used to people. And various areas, there's times where you'll see hundreds of them at a time along the Mississippi River, or there's a couple of rivers up in Alaska. But here, they were pretty much wiped out by DDT and chemicals. And since we stopped using that and have started practicing conservation methods, they're making a really good comeback. And eventually, they'll probably outnumber the ospreys.
Yes.
They provide an invaluable service. They clean up all the roadkill and all the dead animals. Without them, there'd be some nasty diseases circulating them, more so amongst animals, but probably eventually to us too. They're incredible birds to watch. If you see one up in the sky, you can't tell the difference between it and an eagle. There's many times I've looked up and thought that I saw an eagle, but the key to looking at them, if their wings are up like this, it's a turkey vulture. If the wings are flat, it's an eagle or a hawk. They fly with their wings. They glide with their wings in a V shape. And they hunt by smell. They have a better sense of smell than a bloodhound. they can smell a carcass from 5 kilometers away. So they're incredible birds, and I've got lots of pictures of them too. I can only include so many in each show. You'll have to have me back, and I'll show you some.
Sir? Have you heard of any pelicans being in the area? Because the reason I asked, I was up near Fort Francis fishing
yeah.
in the river, and these two pelicans were zooming by. I said to the guy, where did these come from? He said, we have them occasionally.
Yeah, we do. There's.
Have you heard of any around
there? I have. They've been on Pigeon Lake. I've never seen one. I'm hoping to. If you go farther west, they're up in as far north as Canada quite often. There's fairly large colonies that come up and live there for the summer. But around here, they're not common at all. But they do occasionally come up here, yes. And if you ever see one, call me. My email and my card's at the back. I'd love to see one. Mm-hmm. Yes? The odd one. I had a picture in the paper about a year ago of one single one that was hanging around with a flock of Canada geese out in the Otonabee River. If you go just a little bit east of here, we're just not on their migration path. They migrate in huge flocks, like 10,000 birds.
Around Canada, I saw a flock that covered 50 acre fields.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Just 10,000, 20,000 of them in a flock, or even more. And it's just, apparently, I've never gone to see it. I've gone down east and crossed over flocks of a couple of hundred of them. But I've never seen the huge flocks like what you're talking about. And, yeah, we're just not on their migration path. They go east of us and west of us. And love to see a wolverine, but you won't see one around here. Probably... One of the weird ones I saw was, it's called a yellow-crowned night heron. It's a bird from Florida that's not supposed to be here. It was one just west of Peterborough in around the Cavan Swamp one year. Trying to think, whatever. See, I'm more just go around in the courses. There's a lot of birders and photographers that just look for things like that. Oh, a rare bird from Florida, and they'll all flock over to photograph it, and you wind up with 200 photographers there. That's just not my thing. I like just being around here and photographing the everyday stuff that we see around here. I find that just, you know, seeing their habits like what you saw here today, the heron catching fish and the eagles just doing their thing. And to chase birds around. I get a lot of calls from people that have seen a bird and, you know, you should come photograph it. And then go and try and find it. It usually winds up being a wild goose chase. It's the odd time. I don't mind people calling me and invite me to photograph things at all. It usually doesn't pan out. These birds move around, so yeah, I don't generally go chasing them like that. But yeah, you get the oddball that's around. I can't think of any other than the night heron right now. Yeah, that's another one that you don't see here very often. Northern hawk owl. I did a thing on him in the paper. There was one came down just around Fenland Falls. 2 years ago, I think it was now, and I got to spend a month with them, and it was incredible. There was a field, three or four times the size of this church, and the number of voles that I watched him catch. Vole is like a mouse, but a little bigger. They're about this big. And he'd pull half a dozen voles every single day out of that field. You wouldn't believe how many mice and rodents there were. it was just a fallow field. It went to meadow, and that's where he was hunting all winter. So yeah, he was a bit of a rarity to see. They don't generally come down this far south.
Dave,